it's just important to keep in mind that when we talk about tzaddikim, when we share stories about them, each one is a world. And it's easy to lose sight of the fact that we're sharing stories about tzaddikim and Motzei Shabbos, what it means to be a tzaddik. We have to always keep in mind and to remember what one of these giants, people who began as people and they became malachim and they exceeded what it means to be a malach and they became, we have no asaga. Just the stories allow us a little glimpse into who these people were. Just like what an outsider can see. But we're talking about pillars of the world. Pillars of the world, mamish. And each one deserves its own chashivas and not just like a whole slew of stories. And each one is, it's like stars in the sky, although there's millions and trillions of them, but each star is brilliant. Every tzaddik is much, much more than that. This coming week in Mitzvah Hashem is the Yortzeit of Rabbi Shua Belzer. Rabbi Shua was the son of the Sar Sholem from Belz, who was the first Rebbe in the dynasty of Belzer Rebbes. We don't say that he was the first Belzer Rebbe, because the Bach was also a Rebbe in Belz. And so out of Chashivas for the Bach, the Bais Chadash, so we don't say that the Sar Sholem from Belz was the first, because the Bach was the first Rebbe in Belz. There was the Sar Sholem, he had a son, Rabbi Shula, who was the second Rebbe. And all the Belzer Rebbes, Rabbi Sachadayiv and Rabbi Arla Belzer especially, they're all held in very high esteem, no matter which Hasidus you're from. The Belzer Tzaddikim are considered to be a very, very special crop of Tzaddikim. Rabbi Bishula, when he assumed the role of Rebbe with the Ptir of his father, the Sar Sholem from Belz, was considered to be one of the greatest Talmidim of the Chayza from Lublin. And there were many giants who were by the feet of the Sar Sholem from Belz, who were drinking his waters of Torah and his Avaida, like the Devei Chaim from Tzanz, and Yitzhak Isaacal from Zidichov. With the passing of the Sar Sholem from Belz, so many of the Chavraya, they left Belz and they went elsewhere. And after a short while, though, into Rabbi Shula's Malchus, they came back to Belz, and Rabbi Shula was very excited and very happy about that. And somebody once asked him, Rebbe, why are you so happy that they came back? So he said, in a very sharp way, this is how he responded. He said, my father, the Sar Sholem from Belz, was a big Rebbe, and he was able to be merap achaylem, to bring people yeshuas and refuas. If he would come and he would stick out his hand and give you a shalom, so already he would have a refuah. If a woman would come, and he couldn't stick out his hand to her, so he would use a mitpachas, like a handkerchief. And just by her touching the handkerchief, she would have a refuah. So he said, imagine if I lost this handkerchief, and then I found it again. What a big simcha would be to have my father's handkerchief, that he was able to be poil so many yeshuas. So my father's chassidim, but they go away and they come back to me, I shouldn't have a simcha that they came back to me. If I lost his handkerchief, I would be happy that I had it. The chassidim of my father, I'm much more happy that they came back to me. That's how he began his malchus. In terms of the refuahs of the Yeshua Belzer, you should just know that okay, we'll come to that. Yeshua Belzer, one of his great Talmidim was the Harugas HaBoisim, the first Chassidu Rebbe. And on his way to be Makabel Panim of Rabbi Shua Belzer, when he was getting off the wagon, he fell, and his arm came out of its socket, and he was in what he called tremendous pain. When he came to be masker himself in front of Rabbi Shula, Rabbi Shula looked at him and he says, you certainly came with machshavas tahiris, many machshavas tahiris. You're a very ernst yid, you're a very strong, straight yid. That's what he said there. And because the satan wanted that you shouldn't come to me, so he made this takala that you should fall and it should be a distraction for you. Nevertheless, over the course of the Shabbos that he was there, he was in Yisurim Gedoylim in the beginning of the Shabbos, to the point that he didn't want to come to the Tish Friday night because of the pain. But nevertheless, he was machazik himself, and he came. And he was sitting by the table, and he had his arm crunched against his body. And he tried to hide the pain from the Rebbe. So the Rebbe was looking around the room who he was going to give the kais of Birchas HaMazon to lead the benching. So he looked and he found the Rugas HaBaisim, and he said, I want you to... He says, Rebbe, I can't even pull my hand out to hold the Becher. He said, no, put your hand out. So he says, he started to put his hand out, and he was going... The Rebbe said, all the way out. So he stretched it all the way out, despite the pain. And as soon as the Rebbe put the cup in his hand, so he started to feel his arm went back into his socket. So, but he was still in pain. So on Shabbos morning, he got called up for an aliyah, for the fifth aliyah. And Rabbi Shula was called up for the sixth aliyah. And he said he was standing next to the bima, receiving the aliyah, next to the bells are off. And he says, as the Rebbe was making the brachas, Birchas HaTorah, so he said that all of the pain went away. Everything went away. And he said every time he came to bells subsequently, he would make a bracha, Baruch she'asalineis v'makom hazeh. That's the first what you had. Later on in life, once again, his arm came out of his socket. And already at that time, Rabbi Shula wasn't alive anymore. So he had to go to the doctor. And when the doctor was putting his arm back in the socket, he says, in bells it was much easier when they put it back in. Much easier in bells when they ever put it back in. He worked very hard, as did many of the Rebbes in those times, to obtain pturs, exemptions from going to the army. It was mandated by the government that when a bachur would reach a certain age, that he would have to go to the army. And even Rebbe Shula, his children, that they were enlisted as well to go. And they were able to bribe the local doctor to write some type of a medical exemption. However, it had to also be approved by a certain government official who was not bribable. That was the Shmua. So the bells would have traveled to the city where this official was. And this official was afraid to meet with the Belzerov because he felt that he would be Meshuchna, that he would with his charm, with his Kedusha, he would be able to overcome him and to write a p'tur, and he didn't want to make it. And also he had some chaverim who were Belzer Chassidim somehow, and he felt he may have to do a favor to the Rebbe on their behalf. So he left the city when he heard the Belzerov was coming. But the Belzerov stayed there, and he stayed there for quite amount of time. Good amount of time until this official had no choice but to come. And he met with the Rebbe, and he knew what the Rebbe was there for. So he said to the Rebbe, he said, tell me. He says, I'm in charge of government dealings, doings. He says, don't you hold of Dina de Malchus Edina, that you have to follow the laws of the land? So the Rebbe said to him as follows. He said, it's true. You should uphold the rules of the land. I have a question for you. If the rules are all black and white, then why do they need somebody like you to be on top of it? Elamai, they need you to be on top of it because although it's black and white, you have to be able to read in between the lines. So he says, look at the document. Can't you see in between the lines that my children are exempt? Can't you see in between these lines that my children are not part of the Gzeir? So when he heard that, he was pale to him that he had no choice, that he had to write an exemption for his children. Whatever that meant, can you see in between the lines that they're not included? He was able to be pale Yeshua for his children. There was a woman who came from Mitzrayim. She lived in Egypt. She traveled very far to come to Bells because her only child was sick and the doctors had given up.
Where was Bells?
Huh?
Where was Bells?
Where was Bells?
Yeah.
Relative to...
Where was it on the map?
Which part of the world?
Geography.
It was...
On the website.
I think it's... I don't know. Europe, Poland. I think it's Poland.
Poland,
yeah. Poland, yeah. It's Poland.
It's Poland.
Far.
So the doctors had given up hope. And he said to her, Eibishter should send a refuah. So the people who were standing there, they didn't like that Eibishter should send a refuah. So they said, no, you got to go back. If you came this far, you got to go back and tell the Rebbe, give me a aftacha. Give me a aftacha that my child should be well. So So she came back and she said, Rebbe, I want a haftacha. He said, come back tomorrow for an haftacha. I can't deal with it now. And so she goes, she's come back tomorrow. Over the course of the night, the gabbai is listening into the room of Rebbe Shula. And he hears that Rebbe Shula is making some type of a deal with somebody. So he hears him saying, okay, you want to make a pshara? Make a pshara? So nobody's responding. And then the Rebbe says, okay, fine. We'll do it that way. That's what happened. So later on, the gabbai looks in the room. There's nobody there. What's going on? So the woman comes the next day. And she comes in front of Rebbe Shula. And he says to her, let me ask you a question. He says, your husband, is he alive anymore? She says, no, not alive. He says, did he have a business partner? Did he have some business dealings, perhaps, that he may have left undone before he passed away? She says, maybe. He says, and what's with the almana of the business partner? Apparently that person had also passed away. So he says, is she a rich woman or is she a poor woman? She says, no, she's a poor woman. So he says, you should know that the shutif who passed away is being toiveya from you a thousand dinar.
What's toiveya?
He's asking you for the thousand dinar. He says, go make sure that the almana gets the money and your child will be well. That's what happened. And then her son had her for. So what was going on? So behind closed doors, the Belzerov was having interactions with the mace. That the mace was saying to the Belzerov, I can't, in Shemayim, he wasn't allowing the child to have a refuah because he wasn't paid his share of money. So the Belzerov was negotiating with the dead body, with the mace, and that's how we knew what needed to be done.
What's the pshara?
I don't know what the pshara was. Maybe it was supposed to be 2,000, now it's 1,000. Yeah, I don't know. Came to some type of a pshara. There was a tzaddik, Rav Moshe Arye Friend. I don't think it's the one, the guy with the Yerushalayim. I think it was a different one. That he had money, which he had from the Sar Shalom from Belz, which, like a dollar from the Rebbe, from the Lubavitch Rebbe. You know, it's like sacred to the one who has it. He had money from the Sar Shalom from Belz, which he cherished very much. And it got mixed in between other coins. And so he was very bitzar about that. So when he met Rabbi Shula and he told him what happened, that the coins of his father got mixed up, he says, oh, bring me the coins. So he was able to hold the coins in his hand, and he was able to say, oh, this is the coin for my father. He says, hey, this is the coin. A lot of nice stories. This is just a fraction. You know, Belz, they have so many stories about the Belzerov. Many, many, many. This is just a very, very small portion of the stories. There was a yid from a certain city who came with a complaint that his son wanted to marry a Goya, a non-Jewish woman, and he came in front of Rabbi Shula. He was very bitsar. So he says, don't worry. He says, bring me your son. Tell him to come to me. We'll sit together. We'll schmooze it out. So the son comes. He's sitting with the Belzerov. And the Belzerov says, here, would you like a cigar? So he hands him a cigar. And they're smoking. They're having a cigar. They're having a chat together. And then he leaves. That was it. And so the father was confused. He didn't try to talk to him in Torah, nothing, nothing. So a few days later, he finds out that the house, you may not like the ending, but the house which the Goya was in burnt down in a fire. She was killed in the fire. So they realized that when he handed him the cigar, yeah, that's how he was pulling his shoes from. Similar story, but a little bit different. Same outcome. As a yid, having struggles in his avodas Hashem, and again he found his way to a goya, and they came to the Belzerov that he should be played Yeshuas.
What does it mean? He came to the
goya.
He was dating her.
Yeah, he wanted to marry her. Yeah. Chalila v'chas. So the Rebbe said, bring him to me. He said, I'm telling you, Rebbe, no matter what you try to do, he's not going to budge. So So he came, and the Rebbe tried to talk to him and to be, you know, makar of him a little bit. And he says, Rebbe, I'm not budging. He says, I'm asking you one thing. Just wear tzitzis. So he agreed to that. So this yid who was wearing the tzitzis, he showed up at some type of a party with his boys. And it was very, very hot in the room. And everybody started taking off their shirts and their clothes. And he took off his shirt and they saw that he had tzitzis on. They said, you wear tzitzis. They started to scream at him and to yell at him. And they said, get out of here. We don't want any of the guys who are wearing tzitzis. And he was so ashamed. And he felt so broken from that whole experience that he didn't want to have anything to do with them. And he was makarv that way. The Rebbe saw that by wearing these tzitzis, he would be able to have a yechoyz b'tshuva.
The guy were screaming at him, you're saying?
Yeah. He was oisik with dibukim. You know what a dibuk is? A dibuk is when a person becomes... Or a neshama possesses a living person. It becomes possessed by a neshama. And these are usually neshamas that are like running away in Shemayim because they can't go to Gehenim and they can't go to Olam Haba. And they're persecuted and they're fleeing from the bad malachim. And many times they'll find refuge in a living person. And because these dibukim were not, you know, erlich people in their lifetime, we don't have them anymore. No, they don't have them anymore.
They don't have them anymore.
Last time was like by the Chavos Chaim.
Yeah, Chavos Chaim, 20 years ago there was a Maisa with the Divok. Yeah, I asked Rav Chaim Brim about it, and he said to me, "We have a Messiah that there's no more Dibukim. Although the person who claims that there is a very early Yid, but we have a Messiah." So he didn't really go for it. Pasha says that we have a Messiah that there's no more Dibukim. It's part of the Hester Panim that we don't. But in this Tkufa there was a lot of Dibukim. The Shin of Arav, who was a Machutin with the Shua Belzer, he also dealt with Dibukim a lot. So there was a Dibuk who came and he took over this body. And people who saw these things, they would be mechayzer v'tshuva because they would see how they would that the Dibukim would speak from the body and say all the terrible things which they did in their lifetime, and they would cry and tell the Averas which this person did. Anybody who saw it, there was like a very big maifes that people would be mechayzer v'tshuva left and right from seeing it. So there was a certain woman. She became possessed by a dibuk, and
you have to be on like a pretty low level to get possessed, though, right?
Yeah. Don't worry, my shit, girl.
I was right.
And so this dibuk, he took over this body, this woman, and. And it had a lot of Azus Panim. And they asked Rabbi Shula to become involved. And she said, and the Dibuk says something very machutzef, like, what do you think, you're like your father, like the Sar Shalom? I'm not afraid of you. You're not your father, the Sar Shalom from Belz. Not afraid of you. So the Belz Rav says, make sure this woman shows up on Shabbos in the women's section. Come on Shabbos. So she came. She came to the women's section. And the Belz Rav, He came up to daven for the Amud by Masaf, and when it came time to say Kesa Yitnu Lecha, he turned himself around and he started screaming Kesa Yitnu Lecha to the women's section, and all of a sudden the women started screaming, they're burning me, and then the Dibuk left, and that was it. She couldn't be Soivo, she couldn't bear the Kedusha of the Keser. The Keser of the Belzer Rav, she couldn't be Soivo the Kedusha, the Dibuk, and the Dibuk was banished.
I thought they had to like pull the
Dibuk out of like the Rabbi Rabbi Lebelza told over this story. He told it over to the Beirach Maisha, one of the Samir Rebbe's. He said that once when I was at the Tish of the Belzer Rav, the Belzer Rav started to ask me that in Sigit, where he came from, if there's water there and if they catch fish there. So I was very confused why he's asking me this question. And he started to, do they catch big fish or do they catch small fish? Anything the Belzer Rav Arla said. He hardly talked, but when he talked. So then Arla Belzer said the following. Let me tell you a maisa. Hafla of a fellow which happened with my grandfather, Bishula Belzer. Bishula, my grandfather, he very much liked locks. Locks. Because it says in the Mar V'Shamesh that it has the best simani taira from all fish. Locks is salmon, is it? Yeah. Okay, so locks. Locks. Yeah. Has the best simani taira from all fish. It's the most kosher fish which there is.
And it swims against the stream. It's only fish that swims against the stream.
Mm-hmm. However, in the city of Bells, there was no salmon, there was no lox in the rivers and the waters near Bells. So what happened? In Siget, there lived a Yid named Rabbi Naftali. And they called him Rabbi Naftali Sigeter. And he would come every year to the Bells of Rabbi Bishula for Shavuos. And he would bring with him lox. Bring with him lox for Shavuos, that the Rebbe should have lox on Shavuos. This happened every single year. He would bring lox to the city of Bells from Siget. One year, the fishermen, they couldn't catch any lox in the city of Siget. And Naftali was very sad. He had to come to Bells without any lox. On Erev Shavuos, Hafla v'Fela, that the fishermen were fishing off the coast of Bells, and they caught lox. They were catching salmon. And they couldn't believe that they were finding this fish in the waters here. And they decided we should bring it to the Bells of Rav. The fishermen decided they would bring it to the Bells of Rav. So Rav Arla said, I don't know if they made him pay for it or they gave it to him as a gift. But when Naftali came, he saw that there was lox on the table. And the Bells of the Rebbe gave, he said, come, I want to give you some shirayim. He gave him Naftali shirayim from his lox. And Rav Naftali couldn't believe it. So he said, you see this, Rav Naftali? You didn't bring lox from Siget. The lox came to Bells. That's what he said. The lox came to Bells. What do you see from a mice like this? What do you see from a mice like this? Wasn't the Pshat Rav Tully was bringing lox from Siget to Bells? The Bells of Rav and Shemayim was supposed to have lox in Shavuos. So even though Rav Tully didn't have any lox in Siget, there's still a gzeira that he should have lox in Shavuos. So whether you bring it to him or whether it comes from the Rebbe gets lox in Shavuos. There was a tzaddik, Rav Engel, who was an Av Beis Din from a certain city, Radam Shala, that he told over the following story, that there was a certain gzeira, he was a Rav in the city of Belajiri, and there was a gzeira that he may have to leave the post and take a Rabbana somewhere else, but it was a very delicate shaila because he wouldn't be able to have Parnassa in the meantime. So his Rebbetzin said, you should go ask the Bells of Rav this shaila. So he came to Bells, and it was at the chasana that the Bells of Rav was making for his daughter with the Shin of a Rav. Okay? Because the Shin of a Rav, who was the son of the Rebbe Chaim and Rebbe Shula Belzer, were mechutanim. At the chasana, before he was about to go down the aisle, Rebbe Shula with his daughter, so this Rav Engel, he turned to the Gabbai, and he said that in Sons, there's a minhag that before the Rebbe goes down, he reads a kfitl. Do you do this in Bells? So the Gabbai said, I don't know. Rabbi Shula overheard the conversation. I don't know if he overheard it. He was interested to know what was going on. So he said to the Gabbai, Nu, what are you talking about? So he says, he wants to know if here in Bells that they give a kvittel to the Rabbi before they go down. So he says, give me the kvittel. Give me the kvittel. So he looks at the kvittel, and it says on it, Shmuel ben Esther. That was his name, Shmuel Engel. Shmuel ben Esther. So Rabbi Shula looked at it and he said, I already gave a bracha to this kvittel. And he started to walk down the aisle. So he says he couldn't believe it because his wife had already sent a kvittel to the Bells of Rav many weeks earlier. It was at a time where people were sending hundreds, thousands of kvittel to the Bells of Rav. But he took one look at this name, Shmuel ben Esther, and he said, I already benched this kvittel already. Like right before, that he couldn't believe that after seeing so many thousands of kvittel, that he said, oh, he looked at the name and he's like, I took care of this already. I don't need to give a brach again. And he just proceeded down the aisle. Another maisa with by a chasana. He married twice. His first rebbetzin passed away, and then he married again. So he said after the chuppah, he turned to her and he says, I didn't know you had so much yichus. Didn't know he had so much yichus. He says, He said, because at the chuppah, it says in the Zayah that all the family members that they come, the tzaddikim, they come to the chuppah at the time of the chasna. He says, I didn't know you had so much yichus. I didn't know you had so much yichus. Says that the minog in Bells is not to wear a kittel for the Yom Naran. And this is the story behind that minog. He said, once on Leil Yom HaKippurim, there was a very big dachak in the room. Everybody felt very jammed and very squished. And looking around the room, there were a lot of very unfamiliar faces. Nobody knew what was going on. Why were there so many people there? So that they whispered this to the ear of the Bishula. And Bishula made a clap and he said, everybody take off your kittels. Everybody started to take off their kittels. As soon as he said that, people started taking off the kittels. Everybody was okay. There was room. Everybody was benachas. What happened? Because all the dead people, all the mason, they came to participate in the davening on the night of Yom HaKippur. He says, but when they come with a kittel, they can't take it off if they come with a kittel. So by saying that everybody who stays has to take off their kittel, so the mason had to leave because they couldn't take off their kittels. So ever since then, the minhag and Bells is not to wear kittels on Yom HaNarah.
Still now, no one wears a kittel.
I don't know. It seems like it. From the way that it says here, it seems like that's the case. Yeah. Huh? It says the Yom HaNarayim, so I'm assuming it's both, but this took place on the night of Yom Kippur. Before he passed away, he traveled to Vienna to go to see a doctor towards the end of his life, and he ended up dying there, and they brought his body to Bells to be buried in Bells. Before he passed away, there was a the Mechaber of the Sefer Shemen HaTov. So, his father, his name was Yeshua Weinberger. He was the first child to be named after Rabbi Shula, Rabbi Shula Belzer. And the Maisa goes like this, that before Rabbi Shula went to Vienna, because he needed to have a certain operation, all the Hasidim came and gathered in the home to receive a bracha from him. And before he left, he whispered in his ear, your wife is pregnant, and I want that you should name the child after me, Yeshua. When he heard this, he fainted. And they brought water and they put it on him and they revived him. So his son, Rabbi Shula's son, Rabbi Sachadoyev, came and he said, why did you faint when my father whispered something into your ear? He said, I'm not telling you. So he pushed him, he said, you have to tell me. So he had no choice and he told Rabbi Sachadoyev. And when he told him, of course, his face became white and he started to run after his father. So he shouldn't be able to go to Vienna, but he couldn't catch up and the wagon was gone. He passed away then. But this child was named after Rabbi Shula right after the Ptira. Because Rabbi Shula saw that it wasn't going to go good for him in India.
But the chiddush that story is that he went to Vienna knowing that the Rebbe went to Vienna knowing that he was going to come back.
Yeah.
He still went to the Sukkot Yeshua.
Yeah. That's where he needed to die. Yeah. Okay, there's more stories, but the hour's getting late. Okay, Schussi Yogin Alina Valka Yisrael.
Did you work this week?
Yeah. Okay.